to another episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. My name is Ms. Trujillo, and this is the podcast where I chat to people worth shouting about, get to know what they've been up to, how they market themselves, how they keep themselves encouraged and putting out good content. And this episode is one that means a lot to me. I chat to Jimmy from Polar Bear Club, a band that I absolutely loved. I went to a lot of their shows, and he's got a new band out called Shy Tooth. They've actually released a new single called Too Kind recently. Go check it out. They're due to release another single soon. And what a wonderful conversation this was, you know. We didn't just chat about music, although we obviously covered what happened after Polar Bear Club, regaining his passion for music, what's going on with Shy Tooth and how he wants to take that forward. But we also talk a bunch about movies, his movie club, No You Go, which sounds amazing. Definitely go check it out. All the links are in the bio. Make sure you go listen to Shy Tooth. I am so excited for what they will be releasing, and I really hope I can catch them live soon. Please, please follow the links underneath. And if you want to support the show, you can definitely buy me a coffee. Links in the bio. If you want to start your own podcast, there's also a link underneath for Buzzsprout. That's what I use. It helps the podcast out if you use that link. And without any further ado, here is my episode with Jimmy Statt from Shy Tooth, Polar Bear Club, and the movie club, No You Go. Enjoy. How are you keeping?
I'm doing good.
Yeah?
You know, I just got back from sledding, actually, with some of my friend's kids. It was pretty fun.
You got snow there, then?
Oh, yeah. We've got, I don't know, we've probably got about a foot and a half out there right now. It hasn't snowed in a while, but last week or two, we started getting hit pretty bad.
It's weird. We've had snow here, too, and we don't ever get any in this part of the UK, really.
What part of the UK are you in?
So at the moment, I'm in Kent, so just outside of London, like 30 minutes outside of London. We managed to escape here just as lockdown started the first time round, which is nice, not being in the centre of London for lockdowns being nice, being able to go on nice walks and stuff, right?
I lived essentially in New York City for 5 years. I moved back to where I live now 3 years ago, and my wife and I... Every week we just look at each other and we're like, I'm so glad we're not in New York City for the pandemic. You know, it really dodged a bullet there.
You get two kinds of people, right? Some people love cities and they swear by them and they love living in them. But I did London for years. We lived in Barcelona for a while and just get tired of them. I like having space around me, and mentally it's really helpful sometimes.
These are things you don't really know about yourself until you experiment a little bit, right? And I knew I wasn't the type of person. You meet this type of person, though, the confident city dweller who just, you know they're going to be a London or New York City, you know, lifer. I knew that wasn't me, but I'm coming to learn my ideal location is kind of like a college town. You know, like a city that's big enough, but quaint, but has the things that I still like, but isn't like too big, isn't too quaint, kind of right in the middle there.
That's it. And then there's like obviously finding somewhere that's affordable enough to have like the lifestyle that you want, which is a whole different conversation, right?
I mean, that too. You know, I mean, that was a big reason why my wife and I left New York City is just we never... ever would have been able to buy our own place. We wouldn't able to ever afford anything.
We've been looking at places in Scotland because you can get like a mansion for the same place as a flat in London.
You know, and especially like that's the thing is I don't understand. I never understood the city person who's like super content on living in the city, because when I was there, I couldn't afford to do anything cool. I couldn't afford to do any cool city things. So it was kind of moot at that point.
Everyone's better at hustling.
Yeah.
People get their hustle on.
Oh, that's for damn sure. I am no good at hustling. I'll tell you that right now. I think some people call that laziness.
So Shytooth, you dropped a new track, Too Kind. I absolutely loved it.
Thank you.
Really excited to hear what's coming.
Thank you.
So what was the motivation behind deciding to put some new music out?
Sure. Well, I it's funny. I've been working on that song, Too Kind, that just came out at this point 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I've had that song written for probably maybe 3 years. You know, I've been sitting on that song for 3 years. That's just the way it goes kind of sometimes.
Yeah.
But the inspiration, I don't know. I think it's funny. I songwriting is just what I do. It's what I do with my spare time. You know, it's just a big part of who I am. I don't really have a lot of other hobbies between writing music and watching films. You know, those are kind of all I really do.
Which we'll get onto for sure.
yeah, I think the specific inspiration around Shytooth wasn't necessarily super planned. It wasn't like, you know, me sitting down and saying, I really want to make X type of music. I've never been able to do that really well. I always just write what is coming out. I write what I'm writing.
That's
you know?
Great, yeah.
That's kind of what it is. When people ask me about, you know, what the idea of Shytooth is, I describe it kind of as like a really supercharged or a very loud, like Nick Lowe or Elvis Costello, you know, some sort of like.
For sure. And I get those vibes. Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Because that's my type of stuff. And like when people ask me about Polar Bear Club and like how we wrote music, we had three primary songwriters, myself, Nate, and Chris, and we all brought different stuff to the table.
Yeah,
that is what I brought to the table, that more pop sentiment like that. And the word power pop gets kind of thrown around a lot, but the goal, I think the ideal type of power pop is, you know, like Nick Lowe or Elvis Costello or Big Star, where it's like super poppy, but it still feels very adult and mature and almost serious, you know?
For sure. And it's really funny you're saying this because like, an hour and a half ago, I was playing some Polar Bear Club songs to my girlfriend. And I was saying how in the UK, the pop punk scene kind of morphed into bands like Polar Bear Club and then Title Fight and Basement. She was like, but how is this pop punk? And I was like, well, they're really catchy. That it's the catchy melodies right. in it that like brought the kind of that crowd in.
Right.
And it is like, when you say that, it makes complete sense because you've got the melodic hardcore in there, absolutely. And you've got all the post-hardcore like music, but that pop sensibility.
It's approached seriously. It's approached with a bit of heaviness, right? The content of the lyrics maybe is a little heavier juxtaposed to the melodious sound of the melody, you know?
Yeah,
and that juxtaposition absolutely. I've always really, really been into. And I think that's the ideal type of music.
That's also what ties into Shytooth and will tie a lot of Polar Bear Club fans into Shytooth is that sensibility
sure.
and the like the songwriting and how it catches you and also the like how you approach subjects, I think is always going to stand out to people, right? Because it's your point of view.
Yeah. And like the lyrical style is exactly what it was in PBC, you know, however you want to define it. You know, the way I write lyric, the point of view is still very much mine, but it's almost like an extrapolation of what was kind of a third of Polar Bear Club's songwriting. Take that one third out and put it all the way 100% into one kind of band. You know, that's how I would describe it.
And how much does your love of films come into that point of view?
You know, consciously, I don't know, but I have to imagine subconsciously there is quite an effect there because I just kind of see everything in life through a cinematic lens, you know, through a movie lens, you know, and I think my point of view is very much informed by why it is I love and relate to films. It's not like you'd think, right? Where it's not like, I don't write a lot of like story songs where I have some, but there's not like, it's not like Bruce Springsteen style, like, you know, this character, you know, walked over the highway horizon. There's not really that type of narrative. But it has to be in there somewhere. It's too much a part of how I think about stuff for it not to be. I'm just not sure exactly how.
Yeah, I think that if you watch films as much as I know you do, you're going to subconsciously be taking some kind of reference from those things and implementing it in. How much you're aware of it is a different matter. But I remember getting the vinyls and reading all the Polar Bear Club lyrics and noticing, like, descriptions of I think it was as a phrase of you being getting off a bus and the billboard saying that you're official shit. I can't remember the exact lyrics because it's been a really long time. But I remember thinking of that and picturing like a scene when I heard that lyric and others like it.
I think you're onto it there. I think that's kind of what it is, where I think part of what I love about films is subtext. And I think in my lyrics, I play with subtext a little bit. I jump between text and subtext almost literally. And that's a good example of it, right? Because, you know, I didn't literally see something that said that, but I saw something that made me feel like that was what was said. That was the subtext. So subtext and what's underneath the line is that's why I like film and drama and plays and stuff like that. And I think I try to incorporate that into my music. It's into my lyrics. And I think the sound of the song is what informs it so much as well. Like, that's just the other tool you're playing with. Like, whereas a film, you've got subtext of a line of dialogue juxtaposed to a photograph or an image. Yeah. And I think I try to do that, but the image is the music instead. You know, that's the framework.
I'm thinking back here to blogs that I would have read probably 8 to 10 years ago now. But did you have a history in theater, a background in theater?
I did, yeah. I actually went to school for theater, you know.
And awesome.
I think that's nowadays kind of like a joke. And I get why, you know, it's kind of silly. But cliche kind of joke aside, like, oh, you went to theater school, like that whole attitude aside, that gave me so much of an education for in sure. life. And really not just in ways that were equivalent to, you know, performing in Polar Bear Club, which it certainly informed that. But I mean, I was doing Polar Bear Club while I was in college as well. I mean, Polar Bear Club, I was doing those things at the same time, but also just a work ethic, you know, and teamwork, you know, like my theater program consisted of all day classes. And then I had about an hour break. And then from 6 to 10 p.m. every single night, I was either building costumes, building sets, or performing in a production. Like, if you weren't doing one, you were doing the other two.
Hard work.
Really, really tough work. And amazing lessons, you know, just awesome lessons on working hard and working together to put something bigger than yourselves up and together, you know, that old, the show must go on. You know, I mean, I really, as lame as that sounds, that is not an attitude a lot of people have and they're the worse for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you would have thought that prepared you really well for dealing with, different personalities in a band, right? But, the reality of being in a band with close people for that length of time, was it as easy as just translating what you'd learned from theater to being on tour constantly with people?
It was an evolution of that. It was not the same. It was the next step of collaboration, right? Like, because, you know, when you work on a production, which I haven't done in years, but when you do, it is very close collaboration. Working in a touring production company is twice as closer. I mean, it really ups the ante because, I mean, literally, when you're working on a theater production, you still go home and go to bed.
That's
it. When you're on tour, you all go home together and go to bed together. I mean, it's that much extra, you know?
Yeah.
But I've always been good at working with other people. I've always been really patient. I've always just been a very, very patient person. It takes a lot to really get me mad. And that was probably my biggest, like, strength on the logistical side of touring. It was just being able to deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I won't touch on, I heard the awesome podcast you recorded with Danny, Stories. It was a great, great episode. I won't repeat a load of that because I'll leave a link for people to go listen to that separately, right? Because it's a great podcast. But I really liked that you talked about burnout, especially towards the end of Polar Bear Club, and also the realization of, I guess, what you want from life. And I think that's really important because I think a lot of people that I played in punk bands growing up and toured as much as I possibly could for a few years. But the realization of where you want to direct your life versus wanting to play in a band can be quite a tough thing to deal with, right?
It's just like anything. No one really knows until they've done it, you know? And doing it is, I think we think in such binary terms about like what we choose to do with our lives. It's like, it's that old, like, 10,000 hours, like dedication to your craft, like type thing, which, you know, is great and works for a lot of people. But I think we tend to think it's either that or nothing. And we don't realize with most things about the human existence, there's the spectrum and there's this middle ground, you know? So I think that was the big thing we realized was like, we were not, or at least me, and I think I can say this for the rest of the guys in the band, we just were not those type of people. And take into account how much the music industry changed while we were doing Polar Bear Club. Like, Polar Bear Club was kind of doing tour at the worst time to do it.
Social media starts kicking off. Everything's changing. Everything.
Well, I mean, everything. I mean, we started kind of thinking we were going to have a touring career like, you know, X, Y, and Z bands. But really, we were touring in that transitional period of how you could do it before social media became as prevalent as it is now. We were right in the transition of that. So, I mean, really, I think Polar Bear Club toured professionally for 6-ish years, maybe 7? No, 6. We didn't have an Instagram account until I think the last year. Do you know what I mean? Like that's how much we were in that transitional phase, which now is insane to think about.
But I can completely remember that. I remember going to a Polar Bear Club show with fireworks, and I think the drummer might have been drumming, filling in for you guys.
I was
that
actually
night.
Just talking about this with him last night. He was messaging me on Instagram, and I haven't talked to him in a while. His name's Tim. And he was like, I love the new Shy Tooth song. You guys should tour Europe and have me play drums again. Because he filled in with us for drums in a European tour.
Yeah, they were a great band as well.
They were.
But I remember that it was in Milton Keynes. And I think the venue got changed for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'd gone out from London because I'd missed the Kingston show. And getting informed that the venue has changed, even at that point, was pretty tough. You had to not everyone had the internet on their phone. And if you're on the way to a show, like I remember finding out on my way on the train because someone told me.
Well, I just like in Polar Bear Club's touring career, our management was always trying to get us to do more, you know? And I mean, with any band, there's always a tension between the artist and management, you know, not that it's not to be planned for, is still a wonderful working relationship. We had the best day-to-day and management company in the world, but still they're always trying to get you to do stuff that you maybe don't want to do. And that's how old school we were. It's like, they were trying to get us to do more with social media. And we were like, fuck no. We're like, that's lame as hell. We're not doing that. You know, that's just not an option anymore. Right. I mean, maybe it is for some, but not for most. You know, it's all about, I'm kind of glad I'm not in that world anymore because of that. Like, I don't like having to be a social media manager, marketing manager, and songwriter and recording artist all at the same time. you know, we're certainly trying to be better at it. And I have to be better at it now with Shy Tooth because we aren't touring. So it's like, we don't have that. We've got to have something.
Yeah.
But just to give you a sense as to how transitional the time Polar Bear Club was touring was, is we really were in between those two schools of thought of how much you had to make your own brand, essentially. And we were always really bad at that and just never really interested in it because we looked up to bands that didn't have to do that, you know? Like
We
looked up to bands like I'm technically a millennial, right? I'm the oldest millennial I think you can be. But that what that means for me is when I was younger, I looked up to Gen X. And so we thought like, well, Pavement never had to fucking do this. Why should we? You know, like Dinosaur Jr. didn't have to do this. Matthew Sweet didn't have to do this. Completely. Why would we have to do this? This is going to hurt us. Yeah. And, you know, the world was just changing too quickly, you know, as Polar Bear Club was on the road.
Yeah, no, I completely, completely relate. And I think that I've always struggled with how social media... I released a poetry book a couple of years ago, and it was all about how my struggle with making friends and learning to make friends, and then social media coming along and completely changing how people interact.
Yeah. And just when you figured it out.
Yeah. Just when you're like, oh, cool. I get how things work. I get how I can interact with people. And then it completely changes the game. And I think that there's a lot of people who don't like having to push things on social media. They like the creative part, not the
I'm certainly one of those people. And I the benefit of, and part of what I was talking about on the Stories podcast was, you know, finding the balance, you know, and that's what life is all about, finding your balance, the balance that works for you. And for me, I just love the balance of kind of how I'm doing it now. I only have to do as much of that as I want to. And that's exactly the balance I want to be with that.
That's amazing.
But, you know, I hate to sound like, you know, an old dude, but there are, like, I have always made an argument for radio and MTV, like, and those types of things to an extent. Like, obviously, they were very flawed, and commercial radio and commercial music television certainly had their flaws. But I think people need gatekeepers like that a little bit more than they actually realize, you know? And now with social media and the internet age, anybody can make their own stuff, release it in their own capacity, and you truly can choose kind of what you consume, and you can make your own little niche of content that you consume.
Yeah.
That's great for some reasons, but it makes it hard to do this for a living because those little niches are very, very small. Whereas when you've got the gatekeeper of radio and you make it through those gates, that opens you up to a type of person that isn't so good at finding their own stuff. They need someone to find it for them. And that's something that I think as we get further and further into the social media age, we'll realize we miss quite a bit because the average person doesn't seek out their own stuff. They need to be told by Jimmy Fallon or by whomever, you know, hey, this is a band you should know. They're playing on The Tonight Show. I'm going to check them out. That's not a slight against those types of people, but those types of gatekeeping or curation, that doesn't really exist anymore. Everything's like self-curated, and we're not really good at self-curating as a people.
It's true. It's true. And it's weird because I got brought up in a really religious household. And if it wasn't for things like MTV2 and my parents being at work till 5 o'clock, so I'd get home and listen to Kerrang and MTV2 for hours on end,
right,
I wouldn't have found that music. And then, yeah, once the internet comes along, you use what you've learned from that and you can research your own thing. But now that, yeah, it was a few years back that I made an effort to start listening to the radio again because I found that I was only listening to like UK DIY punk bands and that's it. I didn't know who Stormzy was. Like
when I work, I listen to KEXP Seattle's live stream because it's the only way. I crave curation, and I think we all do. And I think the average person devalues that because they think some people, I think, have a hard time understanding the difference between curation and criticism, like, or I guess snobbery, you know, like record store snobbery versus like an actual curated playlist. Yeah. And me, I want that curation. It's the only way I come across new music. I'm sick and tired of picking what I listen to. Please, someone else pick for me. And if it's
I'll send you some playlists.
You know, if it's good, it's all good. But you see the same thing with film, too. I mean, film nowadays, you know, there's all sorts of different types of films. Netflix film or straight-to-streaming film or indie film. Like, back in the 70s, there was just what was in theaters, you know? And that gatekeeper opened up society to seeing some pretty fucking wild films. Like, think about if The Exorcist came out today. So when The Exorcist came out, everyone saw it. Everyone saw it. Same with 2001. Everyone went to the theater to go see it because it was a movie playing in theaters. So it must be worth seeing, right? That just doesn't really exist anymore for any sort of content. And I think it's for the worse, you know?
Yeah, it is. I think it's a shame. And I guess it's always the two sides to things. It's like, I always say TV shows have got so much better, like episodic TV shows have got like so much better, but that's come at the price of cinema being devalued at the same time.
Exactly.
And it's very easy just to... And then you don't expect as much from a film either because you watch all the series on a TV screen. You don't want to go to watch
exactly.
a film in the big screen.
Well, that came about because of this very thing, because the studios stopped. Because now we have independent studios and the major studios. And independent studios make independent films. And we as a whole think of independent films a different way. And when you start classifying things to that degree, it awards people the opportunity to say, I'm not an independent film person, therefore I don't see them. Where the moniker of independent film and independent music tells you nothing about what the film is or how the song sounds. It's literally a meaningless moniker.
Yeah.
But, you know, television studios started opening up those pathways a little bit more to actual dramatic artists to make more revolutionary wild television shows, where the film studios started shutting that out and making more films by committee, i.e. the entire, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is not all bad. There's a lot of great films in there.
Yeah.
But that's not all I want to see. You know, I want to see a little bit more. But the weirdest part about that, the thing that I never understood is, you know, the studios always do what the studios do. But those radical television shows that are getting made because they're popular. That is what people really want to see. If you ask people, though, what they want to see, they won't be able to tell you. Like, if you sat down with a group of 12 people and you surveyed them and said, what type of television show would you want to see? They would not be able to tell you that they want to see Mad Men. You know, we as an audience, we don't really know what we like until we're seeing it. This is the fatal flaw in all of major film production, is because it's all done by survey analytics, right? Like, what types of things do you want to see in films? Oh, we got to go make films with explosions in them and beautiful women doing X, Y, and Z and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, those are fragments of a whole. You're reverse engineering magic, which you just can't do.
For sure. And now you get things like them releasing clips and then taking feedback and changing the whole film based on that feedback.
Like
that
the
clip.
Sonic the Hedgehog fiasco.
Yeah, and like, I think they did it with some Star Wars stuff as well. Yeah, you're never getting that. Yeah.
No.
You're not getting the creative.
It's done by committee now. It's all done. It's like you've taken film and you've turned it into customer service. And it's just, it doesn't work. We don't know what we want to see until we're seeing it. If we knew what types of movies we'd want to see, we'd go out and make them. You know, we'd all be film directors and script writers if we knew what it was.
And it's funny you mentioned about tailoring and films, because today I was having a rant at the fact that Netflix is so annoying and they've got all these like amazing foreign films in there, and yet they don't tailor and use AI to tell people like me, who's pretty much watched everything on there,
it's insane,
what I should be watching. And I'm like, why am I not getting an email? Like, they sent me an email to watch something that I knew had come out 4 days ago. I was I'd already watched that. Send me an email that matters, man.
I haven't opened Netflix in probably a month. I mean, I can't even deal with it anymore. It's so depressing. There's too much. I hate the UI as well. Like, I can't stand how it's organized and laid out. I can't stand the constant barrage of previews. Like, I have so much anxiety on when I open up Netflix. Like, something's going to start screaming at me soon. I have to either keep moving or I have to mute my screen really quickly.
And if you don't like horror films before bed, you do not want to leave it paused on certain films for too long.
Exactly. Are you a big TV person?
We love films. Yeah, massive, massive TV. The next episode, in fact, I've got Shane Brady, who is in a load of Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson films, coming on the podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. We love watching
shows. What are some of your like favorite shows? Because this is just a topic that I'm going to
TV shows.
Yeah. Or films. All of it.
That's a really big, big question. I think I need some, at the moment, stuff I've watched recently, Synchronic by Aaron and Benson was cool. Anything that's time travel related, like the original, The Time Machine is probably the film that got me into films.
Have
that and Indiana
Primer?
Jones. Yeah, Primer's incredible.
Great.
Yeah.
I like Primer. Yeah. I like Looper a lot.
Looper's
that.
Great. Have you watched Time Bandit, the Spanish?
No, I heard that's really good though.
Time Crimes. I think it's called Time Crimes.
Right?
I'll send it. I'll send you a link. Yeah,
always looking to make my list longer than it already is.
I saw you've got a film club. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's
you love film that much.
Yeah. Well, and also, I don't. The real impetus, there was two ideas around creating the film club. One was, I think film people, you know, tend to have a hard time finding one another depending on your circumstances. And so I'm the type of person where that's really all I ever want to talk about. And there's just not a lot of people in my life that share that, passion. So the impetus number one was to have some sort of outlet so I could give my wife a break from hearing about shit she doesn't care about. Like, she does not care about the voiceover versus non-voiceover version of Blade Runner, nor the three-hour documentary about the writing of the script. You know, she doesn't care about that, so she doesn't want to hear about it anymore. So that was goal number one, was to bring some of those people together. Goal number two was also to just expand horizons, because I don't know if you're like this, but I use that social media site Letterboxd, which is the film social media site. It's an awesome site.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to check it out.
It's wonderful. It's a New Zealand-based social media film site that essentially acts as a film diary, a film watch list with a social component where you can have friends and see reviews and stuff. But there's a watch list on there, much like a Netflix watch list. And I don't know if you're like this, but anytime I put something on my watch list, it is truly means I will never watch that thing. It just means like I'm not going to do it. I don't know why. I the second it goes on there, it becomes a little less sexy to me. You know?
I won't send you that link then.
but this club was also just kind of a push to watch, because for me, I watch a lot of films. Sometimes when the moment has passed, I won't go back, you know? Yeah. Like, I have a small window where people are talking about a certain film, and I'm like, oh, man, I really got to see that. When that moment passes, sometimes that film just falls through the cracks for me, and I never see it. So that was goal number two, was to kind of start solving for some of those blind spots and have more of a structured reason to watch those films.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we watch so much. Like, we go back on stuff a lot, though. I rewatch stuff
me
a
too.
Lot.
I'm rewatching The Americans right now, which I don't know if you've ever seen that show, but I think it's.
I don't know.
I think that is the last great show. Like, that is there's a lot of really great shows. And, you know, we've got the whole, like, golden era of television, the Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Wire era. The Americans, I think, was the last show of that era. That marked the end of that golden era, you know. Highly, highly recommend. My wife and I are watching it for a second time now, and we were in the car earlier. And, you know, I have a lot of strong opinions about this type of thing. There are certain things that I watch that I recognize, you know, this isn't for everyone. I would never push someone to watch this. There's other things that I watch that I fully am convinced if you don't like it, you're stupid.
No.
Americans is one of them.
I watch some weird stuff. And like, I love the film Rubber. And yeah, I love stuff like that.
But you know, that's not going to be for everybody. You know,
absolutely.
I would never, if someone asked me to give them a title, I wouldn't say Rubber. You know, I wouldn't say you know, more experimental stuff like that or more intense stuff. You know,
you need to know someone before you say that. That's someone that you know is like deeply into that kind of stuff.
But The Americans is one of those things where if I recommended it to someone and they came back to me and said, you know, I didn't really like that, my first thought is like, well, you're wrong. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
No pressure, but yeah.
All right, I'll watch it and I'll let you know if there's something wrong with me.
Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it's on one of our playlists. But we do watch our playlists, so you're all right. I will get around to that. No, I've got shows like that, absolutely. For me, one of the there's always those shows that get cancelled as well that are like absolutely gutting, where you're like, that was so perfect. And Carnival is one of those shows for me.
I watched a little of that. I didn't watch the whole season, but I watched probably half of that first season, and I really liked it.
Well, I think the fact that it's like it just doesn't end, so then it becomes a bit like there's no point in even watching it because the ending's not there,
or
it's rushed.
That era of HBO show, you know, like the forgotten HBO shows, some of those are just really, really good. And that's why, you know, who knows what's going to happen with HBO with how they're kind of taking stuff. But in the HBO versus Netflix debate, HBO just always wins because HBO chooses quality over quantity, right? Netflix is just like, how much shit can we get out there?
It's
HBO,
true.
There's a bit of a standard there, you know, more so than a Netflix show. They'll always win that debate.
Absolutely. Circling background to music, I'm interested in the period after you stop playing for Bola Bear Club, you start working full-time, I guess, at some point.
Yeah.
How do you regain your passion for playing music?
Sure.
That's tough.
Well, I don't think I knew how, to be honest. I lost it pretty hard when Polar Bear Club ended. And I don't know. I guess that's the way to put it, like losing the passion to play music, I guess. I'll describe it. I mean, when PBC ended, I didn't touch a guitar. I didn't even think about writing a song for probably 2 years. And I just, from the end of PBC, in the first 2 years after it ended, I didn't really know who I was or what I was going to do. All that I knew at that time is that I wasn't going to professionally pursue a creative endeavor, right? I knew pretty certainly that that wasn't going to be who I was. I knew that whatever I did, albeit, you know, songwriting or film writing, you know, whatever, I've always toyed with that type of thing or whatever.
I'd like to see that. That would be cool.
You know, I knew I would do it as a balanced capacity with some sort of other 9-to-5 in the equation. But I didn't know much more than that by the time PBC ended. So when PBC ended, I probably had no job for about 4 or 5 months. And that was really hard. And then I found a job working nights in a call center. And it was great because it was down the street from my apartment, so I could walk there. But it was a year of working overnights. I mean, literally, I would go in. My shift started at 7:30 p.m., and I got out at 4:30 a.m. And
ouch.
It was really cool. I miss it, part of it. But that time of my life, I mean, those 2 years, all I did was go to work, and sleep. And then I had really random nights off. Like, so my weekend was like Wednesday and Thursday. And I tried to keep my schedule. And so my time off was Wednesday and Thursday from 7 a.m. to 4 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
So I really didn't have a lot of friends to do anything with at that time. So those 2 years, I spent those nights getting super high and watching movies all night. And it was fucking great, to be honest with you. It was a really fun time. It's not something I could have done forever, of course, but
yeah.
I expanded my film horizons so much in that time because it's really all I had to do and think about based on my schedule. So I did that and only that for about 2 years, maybe a year and a half, I guess. Then I switched to the day shift and got more back into like a normal human schedule. And slowly but surely, unplanned, I didn't think about it very much. That itch to make music just started resurfacing. And I mean, I'm not lying. I mean, I was a person who all I did was play guitar and write songs all day. That was the only thing I did with my free time.
Yeah.
And I literally, when PBC ended, I put my guitar in a case, I put it in a closet, and I didn't think about it for 2 years. I didn't touch it. I didn't even think about it being in there for 2 years. So that started kind of slowly resurfacing a little bit. And, you know, I've been working full time. I had a little bit of money saved up. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to buy a nice guitar. I spent so long in a band just thinking poor, you know, like I was so poor. The idea
yeah,
of,
completely.
The idea of buying anything for yourself was just not anything you thought of. And so I thought to myself, you know what? I have a job. I've been saving up a little bit. I'm going to buy a nice guitar. And I didn't play guitar in Polar Bear Club, so I didn't get the benefit of like getting free guitars or like doing stuff like that. Or having to buy gear because I was just the singer. So I had the same shitty guitar I always had at that point. So I bought a nice guitar. And as weird as it sounds, that kickstarted everything back into motion. Like I would like to think that my inspiration was not contingent upon some sort of expensive purchase, but for some reason it just kind of worked. I had a nice instrument and I had a reason to play it, and the floodgates just opened right back up. All of a sudden, again, after this 2 year break, I couldn't stop writing songs. You know, it just came right back. And I think really having some distance from that experience and being able to think about it a little bit more, I think it just was, I needed to get a life again. You know, I didn't have any more of a life when I was, my life was Polar Bear Club. And I just I couldn't write any more songs about being on tour. You know, I didn't have a life to express through art anymore. My life was the art. And I just didn't know how to balance those ideas. I didn't know how to, I still don't know how to do this. I don't know how to express myself when my only aspect of my life is the expression, you know? And so I needed to live a life again and find and get grounded again. I needed to have relationships again. And I needed to walk around the world and exist in it as a normal person, to figure out what it was I wanted to say about existing. I needed to exist again, you know, and so much in Polar Bear Club, I just felt like I didn't even exist.
Do you think that part of the journey is realizing that there's a certain amount to that lifestyle that is glamorized and that isn't the reality of what being on, like having that lifestyle is?
100%. I mean, 100%. And I think, you know, I can't speak for everyone who does it, and there are people who do it very well. I couldn't figure that balance out. But that's a big part of it. Yes, that existence is nowhere near as, and I think now we all as a collective society realize that a little bit more than we used to, just because everyone talks about it a lot more. But at the time PBC was doing it, yeah, people expected it to be a very different existence than it was. I mean, the existence of being on tour at the level that we did it is I would say more akin to being a trucker, you know, or I guess what you would all call a lorry driver. That's really what it was. You know, you travel all the time. You get to your destination. You perform for half an hour. I mean, most of PBC, we spent our career opening, so we had half an hour sets. You pack it up and you rinse and repeat, you know? So not only are you not really having like this creative artistic existence, you're not even having like a tourist existence. You're not even able to, you know, reap the benefits of traveling, which is like seeing places and experiencing things. You get it a little bit, but not a lot. So yeah, it's super unglamorous. But you know, I was really bad at making that time for myself. I think that was the key difference between me and people who do it well. Like people who do it well, they make the time for creative pursuits. They get to the venue.
Yeah.
They shut themselves off from the world. They sit down and they start writing. And I did that a little bit, but I wasn't as good as that as a lot of other people were, and probably as I should have been.
It's tough. I remember you talking about, there was a lot of talk. I loved every Polar Bear Club album you released, every single one. But at the time there was talk about your voice on the last record. I know that it was something that you dealt with for a while. Is that something that ever got dealt with, that you ever managed to get fixed?
No, my voice just changed. It's just different now. I don't have any reason to really sing like that anymore, but I don't think I really could, even if you held a gun to my head.
It's maybe. Really interesting, yeah, because I remember at the time you saying that there's nothing that they could see was wrong.
And still to this day, I don't think there is. Now, I've heard of this type of thing before. I think a similar thing happened to Lucinda Williams, if I'm remembering correctly. There's some country singer that I remember hearing talk about this type of thing. And I don't say this to slight myself. I think this is legitimate. There could be an aspect of it that is completely psychological. And I don't discredit that. I'm not saying that to say, like, there's something I could do to fix it. But I think we tend to devalue something that's merely psychological. It's like, no, that's still real.
No, you know? Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
But I do think there might be something, there's a bit of both, where I think there's something about my body telling me to not do it that way anymore. Maybe, I don't really know, but
there's some weird things that happen with your voice on tour though, right? Yes. Like when you start losing your voice after doing a bunch of dates and then you're doing that constantly, like that, some weird stuff's going to happen eventually.
But and then all of a sudden, like, your voice is totally shot, and then all of a sudden, like, it sounds better that way. You know, like, weird shit like that.
I used to smoke cigarettes because I used to be like, oh, but it sounds so much better after, like, as I'm getting a husky voice and it's like,
well,
like,
I think there's just not a lot known about voices and vocal cords. But 100% smokers, every smoker singer that I know sounds amazing every night and never like loses their voice or it does so pretty effortlessly. Every smoker singer that I've toured with has always been that way. And I do think there is something there. Now, I don't know if that's I don't know if that means, well, yeah, it works like that for 10 years and then you get to year 15 and you're fucked. And maybe I just had a shorter span doing what I did.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Does that only go for cigarette smokers or weed smokers as well?
I think it's cigarette smokers.
Because
because I smoked weed. I didn't smoke weed every day. I was very good about it. I only smoked on tour if I had a day off. Like we called it Singer Friday, where if I had a day off
very
the next
good of
day,
you.
I was super disciplined about it. I really was. Like I stayed super hydrated. I would go on vocal rest if I had to.
That's awesome. Tried
to get as much sleep as I could. It never really worked, but I tried to do the best that I could. But the frustrating thing about it is it tended to be those people like myself that had issues. And the people that didn't, the smokers that didn't do fuck all, they were great, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what that was all about. But I mean, you know, like, do you listen to Lucero at all?
I have done a couple of tracks, but not vividly, no.
If you listen to, like, early Lucero records and later Lucero records, his voice has really changed a lot in a way that doesn't sound, like, injured. It's just different. It's just
That's
different.
That's it.
And I think voices just change in a way we don't fully understand. But so I don't know. I haven't really tried to sing that hard since then. But I do, I am constantly thinking about how I'm singing and trying to make it more effortless and be happy with the sound that's coming out. I think I just have kind of a normal voice, you know, like that's my thing. It's like, I
love your voice. I think it's awesome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. But when I think objectively about my work, I'm very confident in my ability to write lyrics. I'm confident in my ability to write songs. I think just the voice I was born with, outside of the Polar Bear Club voice, which is what I guess we'll call that, outside of the voice I have now, I just think I have just kind of a normal voice that's good enough, you know? Like, but, you know, I do wish I had kind of like a really cool, interesting voice, like Stephen Merritt, you know, like from the Magnetic Fields, like just at face value, not trying very hard. Just the voice is just really fucking cool. I wish I had that, but I don't.
Yeah, me too, for sure. There's so many.
We all do, yeah.
Especially, I think being film lovers, and I was born in the Canaries, and I was actually going to ask you as a film lover, if you're watching a foreign film, do you watch it dubbed?
No, I don't do dubs. I'm subs over dubs any day of the week.
Yeah, so we grew up with my dad being like a huge Anthony Hopkins fan and being like, we can't watch this film.
You
need to watch it with subtitles. So that was like something I grew up with. And recently we've got our watch list and there's just so many foreign films are stacking up because we'll be like going to bed and we'll be like, oh, we don't really fancy reading subtitles. So we're playing around with the idea of listening to some dubbed films. And we're like, we can't do it. We just need to like plan time in.
I think good dubs exist on the animation side.
Yeah.
Like the Ghibli dubs, I think, are pretty good. I still go subs with Studio Ghibli.
Same. They are pretty good. Yeah.
But they put a lot of effort into the Studio Ghibli American or English dubs. Unanimated films, though, I could never do. I need that face's voice. That's what I need.
And it's really different. Really, really different.
And as you get a little bit older, you start throwing subs on even in English. Because, you know what we watched in the film club last week was Dead Man's Shoes, the British film.
Oh,
the
cool.
Shane Meadows film.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dialect is so heavy in that film. I threw the subs on for that film too.
Oh yeah,
it just was helped me follow along better.
Oh, what is the? I can't remember. In Brussels, is it?
In Bruges.
Yeah. That's it. I have to put subtitles even for some of that. For sure. There's films where that's just the case.
That is a good movie.
Just to start wrapping things up, I want to end it talking about Shy Tooth because I want everyone to go check out the new material, obviously. But I am interested in considering the conversation we've had, hearing a bit about what your plans are, how much you want to scale it up and how you deal with scaling it up in the way you want.
Sure. Well, I am very lucky in some ways in the fact that I think a lot of musicians or creative people struggle with succumbing to a 9-to-5. You know, I think a lot of people just don't have that and they accept like, you know, I can't do that. So I have to go full bore into my creative pursuit and I have to work it to whatever extent I need to work it to make it work sustainably.
Yeah.
I just wasn't born with that. I can work a 9-to-5 and in some respects I kind of like it. That thing that I have that allows me to do that psychologically gives me a lot of freedoms to truly do my music in any fucking way I want to do it. And really, the thing that is most important to me is writing and recording music. That's it for me. That's where I get my jollies. And as long as I can do that, I'll be happy. And so I work the material to the extent enough that I need to maintain that stasis. So yeah, I do have to do some social media stuff, and I only do what is fun for me and what I think truly supports the material. I like doing things like this. Like, I have no problem conversing with someone. Quite like it. When you said we had to wrap it up, I had a slight little twinge in my heart. It's like, but
you're welcome back anytime. I keep it that long. We can carry on.
No. Whatever you need, I'm fine with. So because of that, truly, my plan is to do enough to be able to keep doing, to be able to keep writing and recording music to enough of an extent where it's not entirely self-serving, right? Because I get my main jollies out of writing and recording, but the material does have to connect with people.
Yeah,
I don't ever want to be in a situation where I'm 100% just doing it for myself, because that's just kind of, I don't know, that's kind of weird to me. It's weird. Being a creator is a weird balance of that, of doing it all for yourself and not. And that's just a weird kind of balance to strike. So I will do it to the capacity where I want the people to hear the music and discover it. But I'll never tour full time again. But that being said, I'd never say no to some, you know, big festival wanting to fly us out to do X, Y, and Z. I don't think that's going to happen, but
It does. No, but
me too.
It's so encouraging. Honestly, really encouraging to have this chat with you, because it's something that I've really struggled with, like, for years now. I toured heavily trying to push a band that didn't really get anywhere, but we got very cool support slots. And we did some really cool stuff, but the problem almost being that the more you get into doing opener tour slots, the less merch we were actually selling, the less money we were making. And yeah, we were getting more likes on Facebook and Instagram, but it was actually costing us more than it ever had.
Right.
But when it ended, then you do have all these like struggles of how to cope with that and how to balance it. And I think it's really good to see you doing what you are and
thank you.
Happy doing it. That's really encouraging.
I think the big thing for me is to be doing it with enough relevance to justify itself, right? Like, I guess that's a very polite way of saying, like, I would never want to be doing it where someone looked at me like they look at, like, a wedding band or something. Not necessarily like a wedding band, but you know, like there's like a certain type
of a bad wedding band.
Yeah. Or like a party band, I guess. Like a band that has its own original material, but like gets booked to play parties and events, and like they're a type of band that gets booked not because of what they make, but because they make sounds. You know, like That's I would never want to be seen as purely like a hobbyist, you know. To me, that's just not some. That's not why I do this. I do this to connect with people and create music that connects with people. So as long as that is still happening enough to justify the creation wheels to keep turning, I'm happy. That's really all I want.
Well, I think it is. I think it 100% is. And you know, there's certain albums and specific times in music that if it connects with you the right way, it means so much. And I was always the person that was obsessed with lyrics. I think it's because I was obsessed with films and books, and your lyrics connected with me to the point of where I in periods where I only listened to hip hop, I was still checking to see if there was anything new coming out from you. Because yeah, it's
thank you.
It's something that connects, and I think it's maybe part of your love of film and everything that makes you want to have that connection with people.
It's definitely a part of it. Here's the other part of it too. I always was very self-conscious about my voice and thought like, well, the lyrics better be damn good, you know, like at least. So I try to be realistic about like my strengths and weaknesses, and lyrics is just something that it doesn't matter what you were born with. You can sit down and you can hammer them out. And the only thing you really have are your own standards. And it's not like your genes or your vocal cords or anything. It's literally just your intellectual standards. And like I said, I'm a very patient person, so I can work on lyrics for a very, very long time. And really a lot of it just comes out of being insecure about how well I do or don't do other things.
That's amazing. Is there anything that you want to plug? Any links you want to tell me to add underneath?
Well, yeah, I mean, so the Shy Tooth album is the big thing that's coming out. We just released a single this week. We'll be releasing one more single between now and the release date, which is March 26th. The pre-orders are up. The pre-order packages are really nice. It's on a label called Dad Stash Records, which is a local label here. All of the links are in my social media pages, which is just at JimmyPBC on Instagram and Twitter, and has all those links in there. It also has the movie club link, and the movie club is called Know You Go. It's all done through Discord. And
are you setting up the Discord?
Yeah, I run nice. And created I love the Discord. Whole Discord.
It's so good.
It's yeah. amazing. It's great.
Yeah.
And I think something that people don't understand about the movie club that I try to communicate is you can be a part of it in whatever capacity you want, even if it is merely watching the films silently at the same time as us. You don't have to contribute if you don't want to. There's kind of several levers you could contribute. Silent watch along and partake in the chat room, or watch along, partake in the chat room, and join the video chats on Sundays.
Nice.
Whatever works for you.
Well, I am definitely up for joining along at some point, because like I say, I have been keeping an eye on the films that you've been putting out.
We've done like 14 now. You know, it's been, we've been going 14 weeks now, and it's really, it's becoming very important in my life.
That's awesome. Yeah. How do you choose the films?
Well, that's the other thing, is I also wanted to make it an opportunity for people to share films that they love. So essentially, the films are selected at random by a different member every week. So we just went through the rotation of, it's a little tough to fully track because the people who join the video calls changes a little bit, but it's consistently kind of a core group of 7 to 10 people that are on the video calls. So we put names in a hat and we pick a name, and that person picks that week's film. And then
that's
we
really cool.
rinse and repeat.
That's awesome. That, yeah, that makes for a lot of difference in film types, eh?
Exactly.
And it's been visible when I've been following along. It's really cool to see that, because
nothing
I get stuck in watching a lot of the same types of films sometimes. I go through periods of like a month or two where I just watch like time travel films or...
Well, you know, and also I think there's something to be said about exercising articulation. And sometimes it's more easy to articulate about a film you don't like than one that you do. And
that's
so
true.
It awards you the opportunity to kind of shore up your senses a little bit and learn what you like and don't like, you know, and what works and what doesn't work. And I think those are the opportunities we never take on our own. We never seek to watch a film that we think we won't like. But
it's
there
true.
Is value in watching those, I think.
I mean, I do. I watch a lot of films. Like, my girlfriend gets annoyed at me because she's like, oh, but this film looks so crap. And I'm like, yeah, but it looks like that's going to be entertaining. Like,
yeah, we could be entertained by the crap.
That's it. A book I highly recommend reading if you get the chance is Rebel Without a Cause. I think it's called, by Robert Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel Without a Crew.
Okay,
that's it.
Gotcha,
by Robert Rodriguez. about the time when he was making his first films, El Mariachi, and he was doing it just with a VHS to cut everything up His whole, it was really, really inspiring.
I love
that's
those
what
types
made
of
me
books.
Want to, yeah, it just, it's inspiring to come out and be like, I could maybe make a film like this.
I mean, you know, where there's a will, there's a way.
And, that's it.
And I think I have such a respect for any film, you know, bad or good. The fact that it's there in front of you,
yeah.
If you have any sort of inkling about how hard it is to do that, you approach things with a certain level of respect. And I think that's a valuable skill to exercise too, is I try to watch every film I watch starting from liking it. And I start there and I let the film take me away from that, where I think a lot of people start with, you better impress me, impress me, film. And I think that's just such an unhealthy way to go about your life. You know, like, that's such a miserable way to approach the content. And it's also a disrespectful way to approach the content you consume, music or film.
Yeah.
You know, to go to it with, like, such high standards of, you've got to work me from negative to positive. Nah, flip that. Start positive. You will find yourself liking so much more than you thought you would. And isn't that the point?
I can definitely be guilty of that, but not so much with normal films, but specifically if it's like something that's based on a comic book that I like, or on a book, like I can very easily go into it being like, this is going to be crap. But I am also quite easily convinced it's good, and I also rewatch a lot of crap. So
well, that's the thing too, and movies are like albums like that, you know, like movies maybe a little bit less so. Like I think you know, when you see a film for the first time, you generally kind of know if you like it or not, but there's definitely films that expand as you kind of think about them more or watch them again. Albums have always been so much like that for me. In fact it's pretty much a sure thing that if I like an album the first time I hear it, I probably won't really like it
later on.
You know?
Yeah. I'll just not go back to it. I will like stuff, listen to it like straight for a week, and then never remember about it again.
Exactly. Like, they've everything they have to give you is on the surface. And once you work through that, you're done with it, you know?
Completely.
Where the albums that really stick with you are a little tougher pills to swallow, but they bear sweeter fruits because you got to work a little harder for them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Jimmy, it's been so, so great chatting to you. I am
pleasure.
Definitely going to be looking into the film club.
I'm good.
Really up for it. And please come back anytime. If you've ever got something you want to plug, I'd love to come have you on.
Don't hesitate to reach out to me again if you see me plugging something at all.
Amazing.
I'm a very available podcast guest, so there you go.
Amazing. Cheers.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day, okay?
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for checking out that episode of the podcast. Give us a shout. Let us know what you think. Leave us a review. Tell your mates. All that stuff. And definitely check the links in the bio. Shy Tooth, their new track is a banger. They've got a new track coming out soon, followed by a release. Make sure you check the links for the bundles. You are missing out if you don't check out this band, especially if you're a fan of Polar Bear Club. And if you haven't heard about Polar Bear Club for some reason, why not go check them out too? And if you like movies, the links for the movie club will be underneath too, as well as a link to get me a coffee. Because it's always good having coffee, and supporting the podcast is super helpful. So yeah, amazing new episode coming out next week too. I am super excited to share that with you. But when am I not? Take it easy. Have a good week. Keep safe, look after each other. Bye.